So we're suggesting the third foundation of mindfulness, to know the mood of the mind. That's very important. So the way you can know the mood of the mind is through the thought patterns that you have, right? So if you're monitoring your thought patterns and not just engaging in the storyline, then you have a chance of seeing what the underlying mood of the mind is. And then you have distance, you have mindfulness, you have choice. If I'm caught in the storyline and a narrative and I'm just caught in the thoughts, there's no mindfulness and there's no choice. It's just compulsion, habit, and suffering. So just to make that intention throughout the day, you know, as you listen to your own mind and you notice what kind of thinking there is, you just always step back. What's underlying it? What's underlying it? You know, why is the mind always moving in that direction? Ideally, you'd learn how to move to no thought. This is nice, and you can do that through nature. So you can do that by just observing the color of green, or just listening to wind, or just feeling coldness. Just very simple things, and what I'm suggesting there is the way to enter into that silence of the mind is to notice to bring up the perception of change, anicca sanya, to notice how the moment is changing, right? And it seems a bit nebulous because there's nothing you can grasp. Change isn't something you can grasp, you can only notice. But what I would ask you to contemplate, if you try that, is to notice that actually that brings you to the silence of the knowing, of awareness. So the point of Buddhism is not to get the perfect experience, but it's to find that space in consciousness which is at peace with all experience. Right? So the desire mind is that which is pursuing a type of experience, pleasant as opposed to unpleasant. And the desire mind is very restless and never gets totally fulfilled because things change. So the desire mind can never bring you to peace. It can bring you to happiness sometimes. Sometimes it can bring you to misery. It can bring you to excitement or beauty. Sometimes it doesn't, so it's not a sure thing. But the peace that the Buddha suggested was beyond happiness and unhappiness. It was something more profound. So we'd say it's spiritual, whatever way you talk about that. And so last night I was suggesting that to say, witness that to notice or be aware of the changing nature of a negative mood, right? That takes a bit more skill and patience and discernment. So if I feel critical about someone in the monastery and they're not doing anything really wrong, it's just I'm in a bad mood. So like this morning, I woke up and there was some negative garbage in my mind. Just this kind of very kind of negative mood in the mind. And I didn't know what the dream perceptions were, but just by awakening, oh, this is uncomfortable, this mind state. And knowing that, and just being aware of that and witnessing it and watching it change. So as I noticed it changing, it came and went, came and went. But the kind of dominant perceptions were negative. Oh, well, there is no, you know, there's nothing wrong. That's just what the mind was doing. There's nothing wrong with that. Like, I don't need therapy for this or anything like that. It was just that was the mood of the mind. But by paying attention to it and knowing right from when you wake up, right? Even in the dream state sometimes, but right from when you wake up at least, what's the mood of the mind? So the mood of the mind in this case was uncomfortable, kind of yucky mindset. And it's really pay attention now. Because that mood was trying to create perceptions about what will happen today. And I knew it's just a load of bunk. But then you have a mood and the mood creates the perceptions. You know, I feel negative and then everything I perceive around me is negative. That's very personal and that's created from thought and habit. But then just paying attention to that, paying attention to it, and noticing it in terms of change. This is very, very helpful because I wasn't trying to change it, and this is what I used to do, and I think a lot of us do, I was trying to change the mood to some kind of positive, we are lovely kind of mood set, which doesn't really work, I find. But actually to notice the mood of the mind and watch it change and come and go, then it dissipated and it was gone. And but I kept moving my mind away to knowing it as a changing phenomenon. And then there's a freedom from that. But the freedom is even in it. The freedom's even in it because it's just unpleasant, uncomfortable. But the mood didn't condition the next hour and the next day and so on and so forth. So that's a little example. So what does it... So this idea of being aware of change then, that's something you have to recollect. So when we talk about sati or mindfulness, mindfulness has the sense of recollecting. And what do you recollect? You recollect that some aspect of the Dhamma. So you recollect anicca sanya, the perception of change. You have to remember that, don't you? You have to remember to do that. So maybe I'm getting all excited about something and say, oh, excitement. What does excitement feel? It's a changing thing. Now, that's not a judgment about excitement or boredom or happiness or unhappiness. It's not a judgment about them. It's simply knowing them as change. And if you do that, if you keep doing that, whatever you keep doing begins to have an echo in your mind, a kind of strength in your mind. So if, let's say if I take a memory, how memory works. If I have a run-in with someone in the market and then, you know, they cheat me or something like that and they sell me rotten tomatoes or whatever it is, and then every time I remember the salesperson that sold me the rotten tomatoes, that memory conditions aversion, doesn't it? That's what it is. That's memory. And if I'm not aware of that, and I just run with a storyline, then my mind just can be thinking averse thoughts. That's a bummer in itself. But worse than that, it creates a mind that does that all the time. It creates a mind that every time it doesn't get what it wants, it goes into aversion and then runs with a storyline. So it's kind of suffering squared, isn't it? It's doubly heavy. And thirdly, and I keep emphasizing this, it blocks the possibility of realizing the unconditioned, because now the mind's just totally absorbed into the conditioned. Right? Thinking that I shouldn't feel that, you know, I should be something else, also absorbs me into conditions. But knowing this is change, you have a perspective, this is changing. You can do something, you can create an alternate state of mind, whatever. But then you have a choice. And the more you create, the more one does something. So on the negative side, the more I think negatively about a person, that just becomes the reality. Every time I see the person, there's a negativity button. There's a famous story with Lompa Samedo when, you've heard it many times, but there was a man who visited Wat Nanachat in the early days. And it was just at the time when Nixon was being flagellated by, impeached, right? And we didn't get much news up in the Northeast. And this guy came and he started to talk about Nixon. And every time he mentioned the word Nixon, he got absolutely livid. Ah, Nixon. So Lompa Samedo started to play with him. So they'd be talking, and then he'd go, Nixon. And it was fairly interesting to watch. The guy was like totally unaware that Lompa was playing with him. And Lompa then later on, he wasn't cruel. He indicated what his mind was doing. So he just believed in this reality, which might have been true at some political level, but at the level of stream of consciousness, he was total victim. Totally unfree. Nixon. So what Nixons do we have, right? What are the triggers that just set us off into criticism, judgment? It might be something about our own demeanor, our own body, our own mental states, our own history. It might be about someone else. It might be politics. It might be food, whatever. Where's our Nixon button, right? And if you can notice your Nixon button, right, and not go there, you begin to free yourself on that level of, it's a kind of superficial level of happiness, but you become available to the unconditioned, to liberation. Right? So it's very important to know the mood of the mind And those kind of conditioned habits that go from one thing to another very, very quickly, very, very quickly. So if your Nixon button gets pressed, if you think you shouldn't have a Nixon button, that's not right either, because then you just feel guilty. Oh, I really love Nixon. But you actually hate his guts. But if you notice the feeling of hatred, and this is an extreme, obviously, but and you say, oh, how does this feel as a changing condition? What's the changing nature of this mood? Then that's what non-grasping is about. That's what non-attachment is about. Puts you in a position of not rejecting this, but not indulging in this, but knowing it. Now, the perception of anicca is not the idea that it will change. That's true, you know, you're feeling rotten, yeah, this will change. But that's not really awareness, that's just an opinion. Good opinion, better than nothing, so that can be helpful. But actually, to have enough samadhi and presence to actually feel whatever's going on and then bring out that, oh, this is a changing. How does it changing? What's a changing feeling here? Puts you in a state of silence. So that, if you do that for a week, I suggest, try, give it a go, then you'll tend to do that more next week. So that's the positive side of repetition. The negative side of repetition is habitual, say, anger or fear, whatever. But the positive side is if you bring up something wholesome and you keep emphasizing that, that becomes your worldview. That becomes the way you engage with life. That becomes the way you discern life as it presents itself. And that's the Buddha's suggestion. Discern life in this particular way, and that will lead you to the unconditioned. So what happens when I do that? If I just learn to do that, so I suggest you use something really simple, and get a feeling what non-grasping is about, non-attachment. So just listen to sound, and just notice it change. You know, so you have the jays, guys working, and notice like when they turn on their saws, that's coarse. Sound of jays pretty coarse too. Where they get that rotten voice, right? Or sound of wind might be beautiful. And notice it changes from liking, from disliking, from neutral, volume. And you're holding your mind as that which knows change. Now that's a kind of samadhi, right? It's not the same as just thinking, oh yeah, the weather's changing, yep. It's much more subtle than that. But that's what we mean by non-attachment. Well, at least that's what I think we mean by non-attachment. Get a hold of that. Inform your own mind about that. And then see if you can apply it to the Nixon buttons. So you feel the wind, you listen to the leaves, and you just silently knowing change. The mind settles. Then something erupts in the mind. You get some pain or whatever. Same thing. Oh, this is mood. This is changing. Try to stay with that. So that's your homework, I guess. And I think if one were to do that for these 7 days, 6 days, 5 days, how many left we got left? Anyway, these days and the rest of your life, that way of observing the world would become very, very strong. And you'll find it always takes you back to that clarity of knowing the way things are. When things are really painful and difficult, that's a very hard one to do, because when there's pain, discomfort, we seek to run away from it. So not to hurt ourselves, so it's good to have a blanket to stay warm and, you know, have more heating in the tent and so on and so forth, not to hurt ourselves, but when we have emotional discomfort, when we feel whatever, lonely or sad or confused, it's very hard to stay with those. That's where the baramis come in. It's very hard to stay with a heart which is really hurting in some kind of a way. But if you can stay with it, this is changing, then that takes you to an even deeper peace, because those difficult states of mind are the states of mind which have the strongest desire, and the strongest desire takes you to the strongest distractions. So we seek compensations. So it's like whoever, one of our meditators who's not here now, the way she compensated was with food, you know the story. And so she put on her fridge, it's not in here. So that's the way she got away from her pain, right? Yogurt or whatever, or pizza. Or, but then she said, it's not in here. So when she went to the fridge, it's not in here. Ah, I'll go back to the pain. That's where you get liberation. And it does work, but you need a lot of faith. The more painfulness, the more difficult it is. Not that one needs to hurt oneself, but if one begins to see the sense of it, one has more and more courage. And you know, if something really difficult comes into your mind, the more you do this practice, the more you see, this is an opportunity. This is a really good chance. And if I can be mindful of this, I can be mindful of anything. Right? I can be aware of anything. Because I know I've run away from it so often or whatever. So it's a kind of challenge in that way. But if it's too difficult, go for a walk. Don't hurt yourself in some kind of forced Buddhist way, but see if you can do it through curiosity, through kindness, through investigation. So I hope your heart just has radiant devas floating through consciousness throughout the retreat. You know, I don't wish you ill. But if something happens, then use it. All right, let's do some more sitting. Stretch your legs a bit if you want.